The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
So imagine for a second. Last day of your job, new boss has been hired, you decide, you know, it's time to move on to greener pastures. You and your old boss had a pretty good working relationship. The two of you collaborated on several projects together. And, you know, you even saw your way through a few different scandals. Possibly the biggest potential scandal was, after learning of your boss's imminent forced departure, the two of you gathered those most loyal and planned to undermine the next boss. But on your way out the door, you had a creepy feeling of something was growing inside of you. Have I done enough? Did I do everything to complete the plan and cover our tracks? So just before you lose access to the corporate email server, you compose yourself an email. You know it's going to be found by the incoming regime. You can't access it in just a couple of hours, so there's no reason to write this email, except you know it's going to be found. It's a last-ditch effort at undermining the new boss, but more importantly, it implies that you did nothing wrong. You hit send, you get up, you walk out the door for the very last time. This is what, in a nutshell, appears to be what Susan Rice, the former national security advisor, did just before she walked out of the White House on Inauguration Day. Yesterday, Senators Grassley and Graham sent a letter to Susan Rice asking her to explain, quote, an unusual email, end quote, that they found was sent by her on her last day of work. The email was sent to herself via the NSC's official server on January 20th, but it was explaining a meeting that took place on January 5th. The email describes an interaction between Obama, law enforcement, and the intelligence community, and how the outgoing administration was considering withholding information regarding the Russia investigation from the incoming Trump team. Forced in not once, but twice, were comments that her former boss allegedly made that he stressed to the need to do this absolutely by the book, and that he was absolutely, definitively, and definitely, absolutely, positively not trying to insert himself into law enforcement activities. Whew, glad we have a record of that. First of all, why did Obama feel the need to tell the FBI to, quote, go by the book twice in such a short time? Aren't the FBI's investigations always done by the book? Isn't that implied? Why did Rice write that Obama made it clear that he's not trying to influence the investigation? Could it possibly be that Obama, Rice, and the entire outgoing administration were engaging in an off-the-books operation to smear Donald Trump? Well, here's something that the rest of the press, including the New York Times, will not tell you. We found it in the New York Times. We're just going to bring these two pieces together. We found a story that ran March 1st in the New York Times. We happen to remember the headline, Obama Administration Rushed to Preserve Intelligence of Russia Election Hacking. This was a pretty damning article that was released back in March, and it implied that the Trump team was in danger of scuttling valuable information that would prove Russia interfered in the election. The article goes on to explain that the Obama administration proceeded to launch an operation of leaks to Congress, leaks to other agencies, leaks all over the place. But that story ran in the New York Times almost a year ago. I'm sure the reporters have, better things to do than read old news and maybe see if it ties into new news. Unfortunately for them, we have plenty of time on our hands. If you reread the article, the vast majority of information that is in the Times claims that Obama was leaking, and it sounds like it came from the same place, what we now know as the Steele dossier. Was the former president and his staff engaging in a leak operation of opposition research paid for by Hillary Clinton and the DNC? Did the FBI know about this? Was this email from Susan Rice a last-ditch effort at covering their tracks? If just one of these questions is yes, well, forget Watergate. This will indeed be the biggest scandal in our nation's history.
It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So, Stu, I'm trying to find a better answer she's covering tracks. Can you come up? Have you heard anyone come up with a legitimate reason on why she would have written this memo?
No, though I think that's always a risky way of looking at a story.
Sure. You know? I'm not saying that we condemn her. I'm saying that we look into it. I'm trying to. I have not been able to find an innocent reason.
Yeah, and I think the suspicion is super high. I mean, I think you read that email, it just reads as a terrible attempt to cover your ass, is what it says.
It's horrible. Do you happen to have the whole... Let's see if I have it.
But I mean, I think we have to, as we do here, as we've all engaged in this many times over the years, we want to hear what her side is. I want to know. I'm not going to jump to every conclusion.
Do you think
it feels very easy in this case?
Do you think she might have written this because of a YouTube video?
Yes, I do think a YouTube video must have been involved. I mean, look, she's not a trustworthy source in the first place. She was someone that has been criticized correctly by the right for her role in that particular cover-up. In the Benghazi thing, you know, blaming it on a video. That was her, if you don't remember.
And she knew the truth.
She has been blamed for other things.
That she didn't do.
For example, the unmasking situation, which was she got a lot of heat from conservative media, seemed really bad. And then the Trump administration said, no, she didn't do it. It was actually not bad. She followed protocol. The Trump administration said that. So, you know, again, you want to step back, you want to look at this and take all the information in, but this is a first sign of something that looks particularly bad.
Okay, so this is the memo. Let me read the memo to you. On January 5th, following a briefing by the IC leadership on Russia hacking during the 2016 presidential election, President Obama had a brief follow-on conversation with FBI Director Jim Comey and Deputy Attorney General Sally Yates in the Oval. Vice President Biden and I were also present. President Obama began the conversation by stressing his continued commitment to ensuring that every aspect of this issue is handled by the intelligence and law enforcement communities, quote, by the book. The president stressed that he is not asking about, initiating, or instructing anything from law enforcement perspective. He reiterated that our law enforcement team needs to proceed as it normally would by the book. Wow, that's an incredible first paragraph, isn't it?
It was a by-the-book first paragraph, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. From a national security perspective, however, President Obama says he wanted to be sure that as we engage with the incoming team, we are mindful to ascertain if there is any reason that we cannot share information fully as it relates to Russia. President asked Comey to inform him if anything changes in the next few weeks that it should affect how we share classified information with the incoming team. Comey said he would. Now let me ask you a question. Why did she write this memo about a meeting that happened on January 5th, 2 weeks later? She writes it as she's leaving the office, her office. She's not coming back. She leaves it on her servers, which she will no longer have access to. I mean, this is the worst cover-up I've ever seen, if it is a cover-up. I mean, it's so obvious. Wait, you wrote yourself a note? Well, why? You couldn't get on the servers within the hour you were off the servers. Why did you write this note?
It's like you didn't show up for work 1 week and then you decided to just write in and say, I have to remind myself that I didn't clock in to work for the past 3 days But that's, I got to make sure when I go back in, I tell my supervisors that there was an error of me clocking in. Why would you email?
Why would you do that?
Especially if you had no access to your email after.
I mean, you're not reminding yourself of anything.
No.
You're obviously leaving this as a breadcrumb trail for somebody.
Right. And it seems to be specifically designed to make sure Obama is clear, right? Like Obama, he was the one saying it was by the book. So if someone, let's just say, a Susan Rice or someone else is seen to be doing something that mm-hmm. doesn't look so great. Mm-hmm. On record, mm-hmm. you have Barack Obama with contemporaneous notes, and we know how
important.
Powerful,
they're very important. Very important.
There'd be record of he was the one that wanted to do it right, and we went the wrong direction.
Gosh darn it!
Yep.
How did we do that when he was so darn clear with us? Ugh. Here's the other thing. Again, if we go back to the New York Times a year ago, what that story was saying was that Obama and the Obama administration were leaking information, specifically leaking information that members of the Trump campaign were meeting over in Russia. They were having secret meetings in Russia. Well, there is no other source that we know of other than the Steele dossier for that one piece of information. Now, when this came out in March of last year, nobody tied this together. But now, when we see that she is saying, we have to do everything by the book and we have to make sure that we are careful on which information we share. The New York Times said that the Obama administration was sharing with people information about secret meetings. So was the administration using the Steele dossier to leak to the press stories that could hurt Donald Trump? I think the answer to that one is probably yes, in seeing that the New York Times verified that they had leaked some information. They were leaking the Steele dossier because that is the only place where you find that piece of information that we know of.
Right. And there's different parts of that we've discussed, and that, you know, you might say, if you, let's say, don't like Donald Trump, you might say, okay, look, the Steele dossier, we've seen parts of that look really shady, but Steele was a respected intelligence source. And the fact that they would look into something that he suggested they look into is not actually all that crazy. The problem with it is when it's something that's funded by the DNC and it's something that comes in as opposition research, that you're weaponizing the intelligence services at that point. Because if you're following up those things, imagine how that could be abused and may have been abused here. But I mean, can you imagine setting a precedent where it's okay that a Democrat or a Republican could fund research that goes to the sitting president, and then they use that BS to go open up investigations to catch God knows what, even if it has nothing to do with the initial tip? That's a really bad precedent to set. It feels very banana republic, right?
Oh, look, I've never understood why Ford pardoned Nixon, because it makes everybody look like there was some more stuff to it. And so why don't we do that? Why are people like Mike Lee? Because this is a question I asked Mike Lee. Mike, why are you not pushing for jail time for presidents if they really violate the law? And he said it's a scary balance, Glenn. And I didn't understand this at first until he really sat down with me. He said, here's the problem. If you set that precedent, then what will happen is the other side will then try to do it to your guy. And then you fall into the banana republic. You cannot use, you have to be very, very careful that we don't send people to jail unless it is truly high crimes and it is so clear. Otherwise, it's going to look like every other place that you have a challenger. Oh, well, look at this guy. I'm going to investigate him because I've heard X, Y, and Z. He needs to go to jail. You get rid of your challengers and you get rid of your ex-presidents. And he said, we've got to be very careful on that. So I agree with him that There are people that will weaponize our government. That's what this is. That's what this looks like. It could be is the government had been weaponized by the Obama administration.
The only thing I can think of with the Susan Rice memo that would clear her at this moment. Again, we don't have to think of every reason. Maybe there's something we're not thinking of. But if she was the type of person, and this is something that they've talked about with Comey, that he was that very intent on doing notes every day. If she sent herself that type of email every day that just outlined all of the meetings that she had, it might not be out of the norm.
But she didn't do this on the day. She did this the last day she was in office.
Right, but
two weeks after the meeting.
The question, though, is does she do this
from time to time
routinely? Is this a routine thing where she's constantly, like, for the record, emailing herself notes from specific meetings? I don't know that it clears her, but it would make it, you know, that might be a defense, a potential defense. Though we've heard no word of that yet. So, that's still down the road. But that's the only thing I could even come up with. Why would you email this? And again, 2 weeks after the fact, still doesn't explain it.
Yeah, well, it does if you found out. I mean, at first you thought it was a problem, and then you found out that it was really just a YouTube video.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, that's true.
Then,
yeah, because then you'd have to make sure you updated
2 weeks later.
Right, just a couple weeks after when you remember, because a lot of times you forget for a couple weeks. And then
markets are beginning to price for a potential rate increase for interest rates. Another one is possibly due in March and then June and the third in December, especially after the market correction concern about inflation. This proves all more reason why it is really important to organize your finances so you can complete your new home purchase or mortgage refi sooner rather than later. The lower interest rate you can lock into, the greater your savings. And now is the time to start shopping loan programs and rates. And you can get started by calling the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. With American Financing, you can get a straightforward and effortless mortgage experience. All you have to do is call them at 800-906-2440. If you have an adjustable rate, please call them now. 800-906-2440. Refinance now. 1-800-906-2440 or online at AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Welcome to the program. It's Glenn Beck and Stu, our executive producer.
Who's very sad today.
Very sad?
Very sad.
Why very sad?
There's terrible news coming out of the Washington Post.
Oh, boy.
Mohammed Quais, he fled his home in the United States in 2015 and headed to Islamic State territory in Syria and Iraq.
Oh,
because
so
he was
ISIS?
Well, yeah, he was curious about life in the group's self-declared caliphate.
Curious.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Quote, I would see people from all around the world leaving their countries and going to live in this state.
Mm.
It was kind of interesting.
I bet it was.
That's how I looked at it. I know.
Crucifixions are interesting.
However, Glenn, this is where it gets sad.
Oh, boy.
Because it's not the sad part is not an American going over and wanting to kill a bunch of people and behead Christians.
Right.
The sad part is this.
Yeah.
What he found did not live up to the hype.
Oh my gosh. There were fewer executions and beheadings? No, what?
Surprisingly, not that. He was tasked with running errands such as grocery shopping.
Oh my gosh.
Taking out the trash at his Islamic State house.
Not an American.
And caring for wounded fighters.
Oh my.
He eventually became, quote, frustrated with waiting, end quote, for military training. According to FBI special agent who testified during the trial, he ended up fleeing and was captured in Iraq. The headline, Glenn, is devastating for all of us.
Oh, boy.
A study has found that Americans who join ISIS are disappointed by the experience.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
If you can't trust the excitement of a nice little ISIS vacay.
I am sad. I wonder if we should put them down out of their misery.
You know, that's
I mean, I'm just saying they came over. Mm-hmm. They were going to fight against us. They were disappointed in that. I say we give them the chance to face our military.
Because they want a military training, and that's part of
that's,
the military.
That's part of the military training. I tell you what, we're going to put you down on the ground someplace, and we'll give you a gun. Run. And
or don't.
Or don't. You can fight back, but mm-hmm. we're just going to...
Good luck with that.
Yeah.
Glenn, many of the Americans who traveled to Syria and Iraq to join ISIS wound up coming back because, quote, life in the jihadist-held territory did not live up to their expectations.
Oh, man, I thought it was a paradise. I thought it was a paradise. Are we letting them back in? Does the story say that? Are we letting them back in?
They're going
in?
To prison, luckily.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Every once in a while, one of those products crosses the line from product name to just the thing that we call the product. It's like, you know, Kleenex, you know, instead of tissues, it just became Kleenex. Everyone called it Kleenex. TiVo was like that. The DVR was just a TiVo for a long time. Now it's DVR. Well, you know, Q-tips are like that. When you think about cleaning your ears, like, it's just Q-tips. That's not necessarily what they're called. That's the brand name. And, you know, you think, okay, well, this is something we all have and we all use, and it's got to be the best way to do it. Well, actually, not at all. It's not even designed to clean your ears. That's not what a Q-tip is supposed to do. Look at the box. They got a bunch of uses for it. They don't say stick one of these way down in the middle of your ear. That's not what they're recommending. WaxRx, they are recommending you use WaxRx to clean your ears because that's what it's for. The WaxRx system is the method physicians trust the most, and it's just like the system they use in their offices. The WaxRx system has these wax softening drops that break down ear wax inside the ear. It's not something that people want to talk about, but again, you're doing this at your house, and you want to make sure that it's actually done the right way. Go to usewaxrx.com. and order your reusable ear wash system today and use the offer code radio, and they're going to ship it free right to your door. The promo code gets you the free standard shipping. Give it a shot. Use waxrx.com. Promo code radio. It's usewaxrx.com.
Oh, my gosh.
You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
Time for a racist update. We have yet found another racist in the Trump administration. What a surprise. It's Jeff Sessions. I mean, who didn't see that coming?
Include his middle name, Jeff Racist Sessions.
Thank you very much, Stu.
This bastard.
You would not believe what he said. He, if I may paraphrase, he said, I think we have to take all of these N-words, round them up, and set them on fire.
Direct quote. Except he didn't say N-words. He used the whole thing.
Yeah, well, I wasn't going to say that. But
and not the A-S at the end. He went all the way.
Really?
All the way. That's how I took it, at least. Now, he didn't say that word.
Well, it was a dog whistle.
Right, yes.
It was a dog whistle.
I translated it
Which is
way.
Weird, because dogs can only hear that whistle, but dogs are so racist. So racist.
Well, we learned about
Black Lab. Hello.
We learned yesterday that they don't believe in equality.
Yes.
Doggy equality.
Yes.
This is so he said the office of sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement.
Hello,
basically
Mr.
the N-word.
Hello, Mr. Klansman.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And luckily, Brian Schatz, a U.S. senator, was able to explain what that means. Do you know anyone who says Anglo-American heritage in a sentence? What could possibly be the purpose of saying that other than to pit Americans against each other? For the chief law enforcement officer to use a dog whistle like that is appalling. Best no vote I ever cast.
Okay, so now here's the thing. People who are racist want you to understand the context of that.
Oh, geez.
And try to understand what Jeff Sessions, who by all measures is clearly a racist, here's their excuse.
And we should point out, at this point, the word context is a dog whistle. Anyone who's trying to add context to an accusation of racism automatically is a racist.
Amen, brother.
I just want to put that out there right away.
And probably a pedophile.
Right? Yes.
Yes.
I was thinking the same
thing.
And
I'm not judging pedophiles. I mean, whatever you do in your own time.
It's a choice. We all have
it.
Okay. All right. So Charles C.W. Cook, who just got to throw this out here, is British.
He's
so
British.
That's something you might want to know for this.
Okay. All right.
He says this to the Brian Schatz comment. Let me put this impolitely. This is moronic. And not just a little bit moronic. This is so moronic, so dim, so utterly and incandescently stupid that I frankly worry for the future of the Republic. I have been reading through these reactions for a few hours now, and I can still scarcely imagine the rank historical and legal illiteracy that it takes to hear Anglo-American in such a context and to assume it's a racial reference. Sessions could not have been more clear if he had tried. His talk was to sheriffs about sheriffs.
Huh.
His subject was the historic office that most of his audience filled.
Okay, wait. So he's talking to sheriffs about sheriffs, but more importantly, about the historic role and genesis of sheriffs.
Yes.
Okay.
His point, literally, was that, quote, since our founding, the independently elected sheriff has played a, quote, critical role within a law enforcement system that developed in England and then was adopted in America. Sheriff derives from a combination of the word shire and the word reeve. In order to make that point at the talk, he said the office of the sheriff is a critical part of the Anglo-American heritage of law enforcement. It's hard to overstate just how commonly used this phrase is in this context. Within the law, Anglo-American does not mean white. It does not mean the KKK. It is not a dog whistle.
No, that's what he wants you to believe.
It's fundamental. It is used, shock, to refer to those institutions, ideals, structures, and customs that are common to England and the United States. That is, to the common legal heritage the two countries share. Most basically, it means common law. There is an identifiable Anglo-American conception of due process, which is distinct from, say, the Napoleonic system. That someone also used the word Anglo to mean white has no bearing on this. You know who has read a history book, or at least read a legal book? President Barack Obama, who, like Jeff Sessions, but unlike Senator Schatz, is a lawyer. Here's Senator Obama in 2006. He says, the world is watching what we do today in America. They will know what we do here today, and they will treat all of us accordingly in the future, our soldiers, our diplomats, our journalists, anybody who travels beyond these borders. I hope we remember this as we go forward. I sincerely hope that we can protect what has been called the Great Writ, a writ that has been in place in the Anglo-American legal system for over 700 years. And he goes on and on and on with more explanation from Barack Obama.
Yeah, but what does he know?
Well, first of all, he's a racist. He used context.
Right.
So we know that right off the bat.
So we should dismiss him immediately.
We should.
Oh, my gosh. The stupidity of people. It's, at this point, it is self-imposed stupidity. It really is.
Especially if you're a U.S. senator.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand the average dolt, right, that's on Twitter.
Oh, this is an insult. Do not go here because this is an insult to the average dolt.
Well, it's
if you're going to say, if you're going to say the average dolt, you know, doesn't know this, but senators should. I'm sorry.
Well, you don't commonly, if you're not a lawyer and you have no legal background, you don't commonly hear the word Anglo-American tossed around all that often these days.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're a U.S. senator and you're about to make the basis of your big racial attack against the administration,
right,
do you not take a moment to ask a lawyer to look it up to see if Barack Obama maybe uttered it multiple times? Do you do any research, any thought put into it before you just start typing?
No.
And again,
you know why?
He is not the only person, the only politician who tweets things that they should think about before they tweet them. I'm not saying.
Right.
But it is amazing that you would not take that step.
But do you know why people tweet things that are like this?
I do not.
Because they know that we won't look it up. The average American doesn't care. If you agree with that politician, whatever they say is absolutely right.
I suppose, but when you're the last president of your party, the last president of your party said he wanted to create a balanced process that, quote, adheres to the rule of law, habeas corpus, and basic principles of Anglo-American the Anglo-American legal system, but doing it in a way that doesn't result in releasing people who are intent on blowing us up, end quote. You think that with a guy who is supposedly this constitutional genius who is just in office, you think maybe you look into it for a second. For a second.
Mm.
I'm not saying you have to understand. No. You don't have to go to law school. Just take a moment to think about what you're doing. Because I know it's so easy to call this guy.
Why should senators be any different than the rest of us?
Well, I mean, I guess they shouldn't. We all should do it, though. We all should take time. This is why people get annoyed with us. And we did this with the Susan Rice thing just a few moments ago. Susan Rice, look, that email looks terrible to me. But I want to take time and make sure I understand why she sent it. I want to hear her side of it. I want to hear both, because I don't want to just go run out and accuse people of things until I have the information.
Isn't it cute? Do you remember when the world was like this?
It should be like that. Oh, in the old days. Back in the old days when we used to take 14 seconds before we accused someone of being a racist.
So this morning I get a text from my wife. What are we doing on Valentine's Day? Yeah.
As if you were supposed to make the plans?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
And it's tomorrow, so don't think that I haven't done everything I'm supposed to do and made plans and have some grand...
You know what I got yesterday was, let's just not do Valentine's Day this year.
Oh, my gosh. Really?
I got that, which I think means I'm about to get divorced. I don't know what that means exactly.
Get her a purse.
No, I can't. That would break the purse contract. That would violate the first contract we've signed many years ago.
You get her your flowers?
Yeah. Okay. Their flowers.
Yeah, I feel like that is. Let's not do anything. Uh-huh. If I don't give at least flowers, I'm a dead man.
Well, this is the thing. She has some appointment or something that conflicts and makes the dinner difficult.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she doesn't want to necessarily, you know, I don't want to go out with me either. So I get it. But I feel like because there's no dinner, then I really have to step up the flower game.
Yeah.
Because you have to make sure you go all out on that one.
So here's what you do. You go to 1-800-Flowers.com. I mean, you might want to live dangerously. You're reckless at this point. Please, for the love of everything good and holy, call them now. Get the flowers. Starting at $29.99. There's time for a bouquet to be delivered on Valentine's Day, which is tomorrow, but you got to do it now. 1-800-Flowers.com has everything you need for Valentine's Day. They have the bouquet starting at $29.99. They have sweets and treats and everything else. $29.99 gets you in. Takes care of it. Do it now. 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio icon and enter the promo code Beck. You'll get all kinds of specials if you do that. Valentine's Day is tomorrow, so order today. 1-800-Flowers.com. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.
So, Stu, have you been following the Olympics from P.F. Chang's?
I didn't. I thought it was further away than P.F.
No, it's actually P.F. Chang's. I learned that from WLS in Chicago.
Yeah.
They were running the highlights of the Olympics live from P.F. Chang's.
And, it's a problem.
That's, yeah, it is.
Somebody thought that was going to be funny, I think. And I will say they were right.
Yes.
But perhaps not the best idea.
Right. Not for the local news.
Is it true? Which events are being held near the Great Wall of Chocolate? Because I maintain that is the greatest name for a dessert in history.
I'm trying to get my a seat there at the Olympics at P.F. Chang's for tomorrow night. Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
It's a lot cheaper than I realize.
Everybody says it's such a big deal to travel over, and it's not. It's not. It's right there, right by the mall. So
their excuse for this was pretty interesting too. They said that someone had made a parody for private use. And they mistakenly used that.
Yeah, they made it
graphic
for something for the sports guy as a joke, and then they just left it in the machine. And so on Monday morning, they come in to do the update, and they see the Olympic, the logo, and nobody notices that it doesn't actually say the city that it's held in North Korea. It just says P.F. Chang's 2012.
Which I guess is, the insinuation there is that's racist or something because he just put
Oh, dear God, I didn't even go there. Really?
Oh, really?
Really?
What did you think it was?
Just
don't try to add context because then you also will be a racist. that's the belief is that, you know, someone, they just did as close as they could get to being familiar with Asian culture was P.F. Chang. So they threw that in there because they thought it would be funny. Because the word kind of sounds like P.F. Chang's. That's
what I was going for. was just that it sounds a little like P.F. Chang's, except it's a little easier to say.
It is a little easier to say.
Yeah.
But usually when this is a rule, this is a general rule, and I don't know that it's hard and fast, but when you take a foreign sounding word and you simplify it to a nearby restaurant that serves similar food, you usually get in trouble. That's just a generality. Usually you shouldn't go that way, because people take that as the only thing you care about from that culture is the food or something. I don't know. Everyone gets offended by everything. This is why I like living my life.
Really, when I think of Korea, I think of two things: hate the dictator, love the food.
Yeah, are you on the Korean barbecue thing?
Oh, I love it.
Yeah,
I absolutely love it.
Have
you gone?
It's not really going to be my thing. I mean,
how do you know?
Well, because I don't eat meat, so I don't. Korean barbecue is going to be largely that. Made of meat.
Yeah.
I will say that they have now I'm talking about, this is authentic, and this might be a little bit weird for the average person to understand, because if you're not in the world of Korean barbecue, you might not understand this. Yeah. But I went to Cheesecake Factory the other day. Cheesecake Factory now has Korean cauliflower or something, fried. I don't know what it is, but it's freaking really good. It's really, really good.
Is it like
good.
Cauliflower rice?
No, it's like cauliflower, and I think they fry it and they put some sort of Korean seasoning on it.
I don't know.
And then you can put it over rice. Yeah, it's delicious. And Cheesecake Factory is authentic Korean. If you don't know that, a lot of people think cheesecake doesn't sound.
No, it's not authentic.
Doesn't sound like it.
No, it's not authentic.
But they have the cauliflower on the menu. You can get it anytime.
I don't think that's authentic.
And it's actually directly.
I'll take you to an authentic right down the street. Because here in Dallas, we have a whole Korean section of town, and the restaurants are unbelievable.
This is a wider conversation. And that I like ethnic food from different countries of the world. But what I want is the American version of that food. I don't want authentic.
No.
I want you to take your authentic food and I want you to hide it away from me. Because I've been to authentic Mexican restaurants. I love Mexican food. I love it. But then I go there and I'm like, why am I not at Taco Bell again? Because it's a lot cheaper than this.
So
wait, you know what? I want to go to Uncle Julio's or on the border.
No, that's not.
And that's what I want.
Yeah.
I want Americanized ethnic foods. Mm. That is, I think, the real goal of America. This is why it was developed here and it's become popular. Like, you know, I'm sure if I went to Italy, the food would be good. But I like the food. I like Italian food in America.
I went to a Chinese restaurant, and I went with a friend who has a Chinese mother-in-law. Okay, really Chinese, and she was like, she had a restaurant, so she comes over to America, and they walk into
Panda Express.
Panda Express.
Authentic Chinese. Authentic.
He walks in, they're driving across the country. They see a Panda Express. He's like, okay, we'll get some Chinese food. She walks in. He said she stopped at the door and was like, good God, what is this? And she looked behind the counter and she said, there are no Chinese people here. We are not eating here.
Yeah, that's sad.
I thought Panda Express was authentic. I really. Well,
if you go into the real, you know, hole in the walls in Mexico, what you will find there are the nacho fries that they serve at Taco Bell. That is authentic. And the same thing goes for Panda Express. Orange chicken all over the place in Beijing. You're going to get that's
didn't know
the
that.
Main thing you can have
did
is orange
not
chicken.
Know that.
See, you
Glenn,
need to learn. You need to
Beck,
learn.
Mercury.
Don't look now, but the Senate has begun an open-ended debate. Now, I thought that's what the Senate was supposed to do, but apparently this is some sort of special thing. Can you imagine if the company you work for or the business you run operated like Congress? Can you even imagine the disaster, how fast you'd be out of business? Our founders designed a great form of government, but over time it's morphed into this colossal slog where competence goes to die. The latest example, Congress's inability to get anything done on immigration, specifically what are we going to do about DACA? The mainstream media story that you've been getting for months is this very simple narrative. It goes like this. President Trump hates immigrants, so he ended the DACA program so he can start personally deporting every last dreamer. What this simple narrative forgets to include is that DACA exists only because President Obama spoke the program into existence, completely outside of Congress and outside of the constitutional framework. So DACA is the urgent problem now before Congress because it's a mess that was created by Obama. Then Trump decided to end it because many of the states were suing the federal government. And the deadline when DACA permits will start expiring is now just 3 weeks away. But DACA was designed by President Obama to expire itself. Trump didn't end it. He just said we're not going to renew it. And every 2 years prior to Trump, you had to renew. Congress has saved this issue to the very last minute. We got to get closer to the election. Their method for dealing with issues at hand is a weird Hail Mary. Yesterday, the Senate began to do what they call an open-ended debate to figure out what to do. Whoever gets to 60 wins, said Mitch McConnell. As if this debate thing is some form of a fun board game that they found in the Senate closet and dusted it off just to solve immigration. Let's take a look at the history of the DREAM Act just for a second. It was introduced in 2001. It didn't pass. It was brought up in front of Congress several times. It never passed. Not with the Republicans, not with the Democrats. It never passed. It had been 17 years without meaningful immigration legislation. Why? Because the Democrats need to use immigrants. Immigration is a giant stadium beach ball that gets smacked around the stands of Congress year after year, mainly, but not entirely limited to election seasons. And now all of a sudden, the clock is running out. We have to have an open debate. The point of this open debate format is to try to build a bill from scratch on the Senate floor. I guess it's consistent with progressives. I mean, I guess that's the way they think the universe was formed. Utter chaos until the right particles just suddenly collided and out pops good old Mother Earth. Yeah, that's going to work. Regular Americans are held to a much higher standard of competence in our jobs. If only we could find a way to hold our representatives in Washington to that same high standard.
It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So there's a great article at glennbeck.com written by a friend of ours and a friend of the program, Jonathan Dunn, who is Irish. Lives in Ireland, tried to come over here, had a job, and the government wouldn't allow him to come in. We wanted to get his take, and I'm going to take him through this article because it's really well done, and you can find it at glennbeck.com. Hello, Jonathan. How are you?
Top of the morning, brother. How are you?
I'm very good. So let's take this piece by piece, if you don't mind. Let's start where you do, international law, because you said I've been listening to the debate, and there's so many things that really hack me off. And international law is one of them. Go ahead.
So one of the things you do that I've always liked is you use the language of the left and you use the analogies that they use. So let's start on that front. Our Democratic friends love the United Nations. They will promote the United Nations law. They will promote international law, usually to fit their narrative to say America sucks. Well, let's actually use the same standards. Let's actually use international law and international norms. What is the oldest international law norm? It is the right to state sovereignty. What that means is a country has a right to control what happens in its borders. The people have a right to elect people to represent them and to fulfill their laws. Why that's relevant to the amnesty debate is this. No one has a right to be an American. As much as I love America, as much as I have done in my eyes to help America, to help share your foundational principles, I don't have that right. The only people who have a right to be in America is Americans. And that is something that we need to break down and explain to people.
So, but talk to me about compassion. I mean, America, we should be compassionate. Shouldn't we show compassion to people who are here illegally?
Sure. America has always been a compassionate nation. You cannot factually argue anything otherwise. You look at the reports that are done year after year when it looks to America's giving their own time, America giving their own money. They're right there. You look at the amount of people who have some semblance of freedom right now in the world because of America. You look at the millions who would have been enslaved behind the Iron Curtain if it wasn't for America. You look at people like me who, if it wasn't for America, there's a chance we wouldn't be having this dialogue at all. We'd be speaking German. That is because of Americans. But also the American innovation, the idea of America, which I focus on, that idea where you have the right to keep the fruits of your own labor, to innovate. I always say this to anyone. If you think today is 2018, you won't recognize the birth of Christ. Take any sector. Don't let me pollute you, whether it's food, whether it's transportation, whether it's medicine, whether it's standard of living, whether it's communication, whether it's agriculture, whether it's food storage, whether it's tourism. Take any aspect of your life. And look at how it advanced from 0 AD to 1800 AD. And then look at it from 1800 AD in the last to 2018. Why is it in that 218 years we have advanced a million times, 10 million times more than the first 1800 years? Why? Because of the idea of America, where you can innovate, where you can dream, where you can make a better future, and you can keep the fruits of your labor. And that is shared throughout the world. That is what has made the world a better place. So America has always been compassionate. The question isn't, should America be compassionate? It's who you should be compassionate to people who did things the right way or people who did things the wrong way through their fault or through not their own fault. It's who you reward. You show that compassion to.
But most Americans will say that we need comprehensive immigration reform.
That's a lie. I'm sorry to tell you that. It's nothing but a flat-out lie, Glenn. You have every law on the books that you need right now. What you haven't got is the political will to enforce them. You have every law, whether you enter America as a tourist, which I did last year, I had 90 days and I had to leave, whether it was a guest worker program, you go over there as a student, you know, for 3 months and during the summer, whether it's a casual worker, whether it's a full-time worker, or whether you're going through actually immigration process. You have a system of government that has a visa for a certain period of time. All the laws are in the books there that says you have that visa. There's a process there. You may not like the process because it is very time consuming. It is very expensive, but there's a process there. And you know, when you go through that process, if you overstay your visa and your visa expires, you can be deported. You admit that. But also there's laws in the books that can stop you immigrate going to America again for up to 3 to 10 years. So there is laws on the system. What you haven't got is the political will to enforce them, which, just take a step back for a minute, which is, I always find this hilariously funny. What politicians in DC are saying right now is, we have all these laws in the books, but we don't like them. What we're going to do is, what we need to do is, you need to give us the power to write new laws, and we promise we'll follow these laws, because we promise. But what happens if someone down the road goes, you know what, I don't like these laws? But also, as someone, as an outsider, I get frustrated because you're talking about rewarding people who are not Americans because you don't have the political will to enforce them. Can you imagine the outrage if there was a load of people, if the Tea Party actually got a load of power in D.C. and had the White House and said, you know what, taxation actually is theft. The IRS is just null and void. We're just not going to follow IRS laws. Can you imagine the reaction to the mainstream media and the politicians? But yet, for a non-American, it's, oh, well, they're dreamers. You have to fight for them.
We're talking to Jonathan Dunn. He's a blogger and a friend of the program from Ireland, who has wanted to be an American citizen since, how old were you, Jonathan?
We can never find out the exact age. It was in the early 90s. I got very fortunate to fly over to Florida, to my aunt in Clearwater. I think I was about 7 or 8. My mother thinks I was maybe 8 or 9. We can never find the exact date because you don't keep those type of details anymore. Mm. But it's at least 25 years.
And you have tried to come over here legally. Tell me about your plight here.
Sure. So for someone like me, I fell in love 25 years ago. I fell in love with the country when I went over there. I fell in, you know, if you take an impressionable young boy from Ireland who had never really been outside the country, you put him in America with warm weather, beautiful women, beautiful accents, more food, different sports, different culture. It just, I fell in love. And then with the advancement of the internet, I fell in love with the country, the idea of America. And I always wanted to be part of it. So ever since I've been a teenager, my only dream in life is to be an American. That is the only dream I have. And I wanted to get over there. So there's two ways that people like me get there. One is through the Visa lottery program, which a lot of people have heard. It's you put in your name, you pay a fee, and you hope your number gets called. But for me, I always think that's a lottery. That's luck, and I've never been lucky. I want to earn my way there. So what I always wanted to do was I do a lot of work for free. I've blogged. I do a show on your network, which I'm so thankful to still have. I do work behind the scenes. All I ever wanted was someone to come along and go, you know what? That guy is all right. Let's give him a chance. Last year, I had my dream come true. You know this story. You offered me a job with the thanks to Dom and Jonathan pushing me behind the scenes. I had the chance to live in the greatest country in the world, greatest state in the union, and work for one of my personal heroes. We went through the process. We met with the lawyers, which you, Dom, and all helped. And I found that I don't meet the standards. I don't have a college degree, so I don't meet the college requirements, and I don't have the work experience. Because what I know, I could do the job you offered. I don't have any paid work experience in it. So my dream is dead. So I'm left with three choices. One is I accept my dream is dead. I stay in a country that I don't have any emotional connection to. I have no very much career opportunities because what I say isn't exactly popular. And I struggle to put food on the table. Option two is I go against everything I have ever stood for, every principle I have ever spoken against. And yet, you know what? Everyone else says they're entitled. I'm entitled. America owes me. Look at all the stuff I've done for you for free. I've done speaking tours. I've done shows. I've done interviews. I've done writing. You owe me something. It's payback time. It's not true, but I could fall for that line and go illegally. Or I could go against every tenet of my faith and say, you know what? Just marry some girl for a visa and just get over there. The ends justify the means. Now, my choice is simple. My principles are my principles, not because they're easy. It's because you believe in them. And you cannot go against your principles, even when it screws you personally. So my choice is I gotta accept this fact and accept my dream is dead. However, what I would ask you is, in that story is, how many other people who are the millions doing things the right way, how many other of those would say, I'm going to follow my principles? Maybe they don't have those principles. Maybe they don't share them. You're making it easier for people to break the law. And that is fundamentally so sad for me.
Jonathan, I don't know if the audience could hear it. I hope they could. The crack in your voice as you talked about things, and I can see it on your face now. Let me just assure you that your dream is not dead. I don't know how things work out, but we both have real faith in God, and things always work out the way He wants them to, and in His time. And don't give up. I am such a supporter of yours, and I want more people like you in our country. And that doesn't mean from Ireland, that doesn't mean white, that means people who would give their right arm to have what we'd so easily dismiss.
Absolutely. And all of this thing, the thing that saddens me the most about this debate is that everything I've said, just scrap that for a minute. Because for me, America is a country, it is an idea. And I've always believed, and people have always mocked me saying, John, America was never like this. The America you think exists is a fairy tale. Okay, well, let's say that's true. What America do you want to live in going forward? The question right now is not about anything about illegals or legal immigrants. The question is about what America do you want to live in? I've always believed the narrative that if America was the only country, it was exceptional in the belief that if you did things the right way, if you worked hard and you played by the rules, there was a better chance and a better opportunity that you would be more successful than anywhere else in the world. What country does the American people want to hand off to their kids and their grandkids? Do you want to reward hard work and that ideal? Or do you want to just go, well, you know what? There's political will to reward those who didn't follow the law. Let's just go with that. This is the key essence to what you want to be, what country you want to be, and what country you want to hand over to your grandkids. Because I will say this, there is no other country. The most distraught thing I can say to you is, I have no other dream. I can't say, well, you know what, America rejected me. I'll go to New Zealand. I'll go to Australia. I'll go to Europe. I'll go to Russia. Why? Because there's only one America. There's only one idea, which is about freedom. This is not about people like me. It's about you. There's only one country that I say, America is great because Americans are good. It's about your people. It's about your principles. And you can still be that shining city on a hill for people like me to go, I want to be part of that.
Jonathan, thank you so much. And God bless you. Thank you.
God bless you too, sir.
You will find Jonathan at freedomsdisciple.com, speaking to us from his home in Ireland. If anybody has any ideas of how he can legally emigrate to America, please, please let us know or let him know. He's got such a heart, and he loves the principles of America and would be a very proud American, but he wants to do it the right way. Freedomsdisciple.com. I want to tell you about Simply Safe, home security company that I've worked with since they had 10 employees, and I'm thinking of Jonathan right now. You just can't start businesses like you can in America, or used to be able to even in America. Bill Gates says he couldn't start Microsoft today with the new laws and everything that we have. But we are about just having a dream and being able to do it. Now they are protecting over 2 million people, and I don't know how many Americans they employ. They just released a brand new home security system. It's the all-new Simply Safe. They've rebuilt it and completely redesigned it. They've added new safeguards to protect against power outages and down Wi-Fi and cut landlines. They've done everything they could to destroy it and stop it from working, and they can't make it happen. That's when they knew that it was right for you. The all-new Simply Safe, redesigned to be practically invisible with very powerful sensors that are so small that you won't notice them. But when the alarm goes off and the cameras go off, the perpetrator will notice them. This is what's really remarkable is this brand new high-tech system, this smart system. You still get it for the same fair and honest price. And 24/7 protection is only $15 a month. There's no contract. So it's smaller, faster, stronger than anything they've built before. Supply is limited. I want you to check this out right now. It's simplysafebeck.com. Go there now. Save a ton. Protect your family the simple way. Simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
There's got to be somebody in this audience that knows how to help Jonathan. We have tried, and we don't know how to get him to come in and do it the right way to become an American citizen. And it's just, it's killing him, and it kills us every time we talk to him.
You know, the media and the left will tell you that conservatives don't want immigrants here. And it's, I can tell you right now, there's not one person in this audience that wants Jonathan Dunn out of this country. Everybody wants him here. Everybody. Every conservative hearing a guy like that speak about America like that wants him here. And it's not because he's white. It's not because he's from Ireland. There are people from every country on earth that are like Jonathan, and he'd tell you that.
And those are the ones we want.
Yeah, of course. And I think we have to be very careful as conservatives when we talk about illegal immigration to make sure it's about illegal immigration. You know, some people in the immigration hawk movement are very much against legal immigration as well and reducing legal immigration. That is not the answer. The answer is to make it easier for people like Jonathan Dunn to get here.
And harder for the bad guys.
Right, exactly.
It's
about a rule of law, which we need and we don't currently have. And it's about a merit-based system. And we've seen some good things that have been proposed on that front. Someone who really loves America, who can do things here, and not people who want to do the opposite, that want to use our resources and not offer things. But I mean, that has nothing to do with color of skin. It has nothing to do with country of origin. It's about, do you feel the same way as Jonathan, as you just heard from Jonathan? I don't think there's anybody in this audience that would say, anybody who looked any way that had the same attitude as Jonathan, that we would want to restrict them from coming into this country. We want people like that. Most of the people in this country don't even have near the passion for this country that Jonathan has. I mean,
did you hear it in his voice when he said, my dream, my whole life dream has been just to become an American, and it's dead. There's no way for me to do it. I mean, we had attorneys. We did everything we could, and we did it all the right way, and there was just no chance. And it's wrong. It's wrong. Back in a minute.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
You can't start a diet on the weekend. It's impossible. That's why Monday is the perfect day to start a diet, because you're coming off of the weekend where maybe you had a little bit too much to eat, a little bit too much to drink, and you need to take a positive step. That's Riduzone. Let me get you started on Riduzone right now. Riduzone is what I take. I love it. It's been helping me lose weight, and it is it's a really cool story. It's a local Texas company, and they went through a bunch of studies and found that there's some stuff in olive oil that actually helps you speed up your metabolism and control your appetite. I don't know how it works. I can just tell you that it does. One of our Blaze reporters, Sarah Gonzalez, lost over 100 pounds on her own, and now she takes Riduzone to control her cravings. She says it's so much easier to control her appetite, and she's not thinking about food all the time. Try Riduzone. Give it a shot. You're going to save 30% off right now with the offer code STU. It's Riduzone.com, R-I-D-U-Z-O-N-E.com. That's Riduzone.com, offer code STU for 30% off. Go there now, Riduzone.com.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Let's go to Mark in Massachusetts. Thanks so much for listening. Mark, you're on.
Glenn, thanks for everything you do. And just as an aside, any day that you're feeling down about things in general, just know that you are Churchill to millions of us.
Holy cow. And is that a fat, joke or?
No. You know what,
I appreciate, I really appreciate that. Thank you. It's way too kind. Thank you.
So I have a lot of expertise in this area, and it sounds as if you guys were attempting to get an H-1B visa for Jonathan.
No idea.
Would certainly meet the education and experience requirements, but there's another type of visa called an L-1. It would take some time and some money, but what an L-1 visa is, it's a multinational company. So let's say, you know, Google, for this, you know, lack of a, you know, just any company. Mm-hmm. If they have an office in another country and they have a headquarters here, they can take someone who's an employee at that company at Google. As long as they've been employed for 1 year, they can then be relocated and work at the headquarters, but they can only be employed by that one company only. And so if you were to establish some entity in Ireland under Mercury One or the Blaze or whatever, and establish you are a viable business entity and employ Jonathan there for 12 months, you would be able to bring him to the United States, and he could then be here living, working legally under an L-1 visa. And then from there, once he has an L-1, then you could pursue all of the other legal channels that could get him permanent resident standing. But it would just require that 12 months as an employee of your company that established itself as an entity in Ireland.
Hmm. That kind of sounds like a bogus marriage, but
it's a very interesting workaround.
Yes.
And also, it's a business interest, right? I mean, if we, you know, there's no reason, certainly we'd love to have a branch of our company or Mercury One over in Ireland to spread that word. We've talked about it many times, not just Ireland, but all around the world.
Yeah.
Israel and other places. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting thought.
Mark, thank you very much for your phone call.
It's a sad thought, though, because, I mean, why do we need to do that? We need to open up a business in another country to get a guy who loves America and would help America.
See, here's the problem. I was listening to him talking, and I thought, you know, if I'm sitting there and I'm at the immigration office, I'm listening to this guy, and I'm like, I want this guy in. I mean, listen to the way he talks about the country, and he's tearing up that it's his dream to be an American for all the right reasons. But you know, there are people on the, you know, people that would listen to him and go, he's exactly not the right guy to have on. How do you create a system that is based somewhat on gut, you know?
Well, I mean,
you can't,
right?
You
can only do all the checking, you know, that you're not going to be able to create a system that's exactly like that, but you can create one that does base some of the process on merit. A higher percentage of it on merit instead of, you know, family relations, right? Like you could.
Well, but he didn't make it for merit. He has a hard time finding work in Ireland. I mean, you know, it's not exactly a bustling, you know, place, especially for somebody who doesn't, I mean, he doesn't really relate to the Irish anymore. He considers himself an American, and he's sticking up for America all the time.
I know. Can you imagine saying about your own country what he said, which was, I have no emotional connection to this country?
You know, that's not, that's more than just liking America. That's like, you know, he's so in love with America that he no longer, it's like he's like an, he's had an affair. he's no longer in love with his wife, and he's had an affair, and that's what he feels passionate about. He's like in a passionless marriage with his country, which is kind of sad, you know. I mean, in a way, and I can understand how that would make life difficult,
especially since he wants a divorce and his, you know, spouse of a country won't give him one.
Yeah, yeah.
Let me go to Pablo in Utah. Hello, Pablo.
Hello, Glenn. This is Pablo from Salt Lake City, Utah.
How are things?
Doing very good here. This is the city of some good friends of yours, like Gordon B. Hinckley and yes. Thomas S. Monson and other people.
Yes.
Good. I'm an immigrant myself. I am right now a permanent resident here in the U.S. It took me 7 years, $60,000, but I made it. I'm going to be a U.S. citizen in a couple of years. And I just listened to Jonathan, and I don't know. I assume that he consulted with an immigration attorney, but I believe there's some path for him to become a U.S. legal resident. For example, the other person that spoke before me, he said something about what's called an H-1B visa, which mm-hmm. is a visa that the Immigration Department issues to foreigners, aliens mm-hmm. with college degrees. Mm-hmm. Jonathan said that he doesn't hold a college degree, but even an associate degree or a bachelor degree would do, because immigration considers 1 year of schooling out of every 3 years of work experience. So let's say that this guy holds a bachelor's degree, which is not enough because it's 4 years of schooling. But if he also has 6 years of work experience, that would add up to 6 years, which would be considered as a master's degree by the immigration department. So he should pursue an H-1B visa. The two key elements here, first, he needs to have some schooling, either master's, bachelor plus 6 years experience, or an associate degree plus 12 years of experience. Second, he needs to have a job offer from a U.S. company.
Those he has that.
Two key elements.
He has so that.
Those are the, well, the schooling, I don't know, unless he only finished high school. I don't know if he would be eligible with only a high school diploma.
Yeah, I don't think I don't think he is. He doesn't have the schooling. It's not a good economic situation for Jonathan over there, and so I doubt that he went beyond the high school level. I know he graduated from high school, but I don't think he did any college experience. Pablo, thanks for your call.
This is why the conservative focus should be making legal immigration easier and more rational. You know, if that is it's not a hateful message, it's a welcoming message. And border security is part of that, by the way. But I mean, when you make it so impossible for people who are qualified to come here to come, then you wind up increasing the amount of illegal immigration. If you were to make it more rational for people to be able to come here and not make it impossible, people would be coming legally more often. You add in border security and you solve this problem pretty quickly.
Let me go to Cindy in Indiana. Hi, Cindy.
Hey, I just want to marry Jonathan. I mean, I know he'd have to lower his standards and yes. his principles, but come on, yes, it's worth it.
Right, right, right.
Why don't speak so negatively about yourself? Why? Who says he's lowering his standards?
Well, you know, I don't know. He's probably cute and thin and young, and I'm not any of that.
So. No, he's young. He's young. Thanks, Cindy.
You should know he interacts with us. He's not going to be thin. That's nope. not going to be.
Nope.
That's not.
We don't bring thin people into this atmosphere. They may start thin, but they don't end thin. All right. Every business needs to hire great people, and there's a better way to find them. Something better than just posting your job online and praying for the right people to see it. That is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter knew that there was a smarter way, so they built a platform that finds the right candidates for you, for your job. And here's what it does. You can post all of your jobs with one single click on 100 different platforms. However, that's where everybody can go. What ZipRecruiter does is they go out and they identify the people with the right experience that may not have seen your post, and they invite them to apply to your job. The invitations have revolutionized how you find your next hire. 80% of employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a candidate that they like and is qualified within the very first day. ZipRecruiter also doesn't stop there. It even spotlights the strongest applications that you receive. So if you receive a buttload, they just want to make sure, did you see this one? Because this one is a great match for you. The right candidate is out there. Find them with ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter, you can use it now for free at ZipRecruiter.com/Beck. Use it for free. ZipRecruiter.com/Beck.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
All right. Let's take a look at some of the news. One of the pitches that really was just one guy's idea, and Trump said, put that in the budget. I kind of like that. Trump administration is proposing to save billions in the upcoming years by giving low-income families a box of government-picked non-perishable foods every month instead of food stamps. The White House budget director said on Monday, this is a pretty good idea. It's a Blue Apron type program, which I don't think Blue Apron probably...
Big fan of Blue Apron does not quite send you that. They send you, you know, really good gourmet meals that you have to, with fresh ingredients. It's a little bit different, but I mean, it's a food delivery system, which
yes,
is, I guess, as close as you can
the
get.
The Department of Agriculture...
Sonny Perdue is the director for agriculture secretary. Apparently, this was his idea.
He's calling it America's Harvest Box. It would contain 100% U.S. grown and produced foods. It would include items that are shelf stable, like milk. That's not really shelf stable. I don't know if the milk is not unless
the shelf is refrigerated.
Yeah, I mean, does anybody even drink powdered milk anymore? I grew up in a family we had to drink powdered milk. We couldn't afford milk.
I've actually
hated it.
We have all sorts of milk in our refrigerator, and none of them come from cows. They come from nuts.
You cannot milk an almond. It has no nipples.
No, it does.
The chair that you have to get underneath it is so small. I hate it, too.
With cashew milk? Almond milk?
We have that, too.
We've got like the silk,
yes,
whatever that is. I feel like I don't know. The milk thing is changing, oddly. The only milk we have is we have the milk for like the kids' cereal, which is regular milk. But I've come to the point that I've had so much almond milk that I actually sort of prefer it.
I got to stop being friends with you.
I don't understand it.
I can't be friends with you.
It's fair. It's fair.
I can't be friends.
It's not milk, obviously. It's water mixed with almond dust, right?
I don't know
it's
what
not
it
really
is. I don't know what it is, but it's not milk.
It replicates
milk. No baby almonds are you know, snuggling up to the mother almond saying, oh, I need a little bit. No, it doesn't work that way. It's not milk. Milk is something that comes from a teat that feeds the children. That's not milk.
I don't know. The teat thing is a weird delivery system. I don't understand it. I think they should ban it. Ban all teats. It's a new proposal. I just came up with it.
I'm going to. Anyway, okay, so it doesn't include fresh items like produce or meat, which is a problem.
Right, but I mean, they don't have to provide, they're not just saying they're providing every single thing you're going to need. They're just saying, here are some basics, right? Like peanut butter or
milk, canned fruits, and cereal.
The basics, right? You get a certain amount of basics that the government could theoretically provide. Now, I don't like this idea because I don't want the government getting into the food delivery system.
But wait a minute.
Per se.
Yeah, no, it's bad. But wait, why not, Stu? I mean, it's not just a delivery system. It is they're picking what food is right for you. But didn't Michelle Obama already do this?
I never understood why the left would have any problem with this at all.
Yeah.
I mean, if Michelle Obama is going to say that kids at school who are paying for food have to eat certain foods that are only healthy. Why not? If we're giving food stamps, why should they be able to purchase snack cakes?
And if I may say, she also says, especially those who are underprivileged, they don't have food, or if they do have food, it's not the right food. It's not good, nutritious food. So why wouldn't you be for food stamps just buying nutritious food or, you know, sending a box of what we, you know, what we as a, a people, mm-hmm. you know, a small committee in Washington decides is good food.
Yeah. Well, and again, when you are on a government program, and let's say this world is designed the way it's supposed to be, which is a government program is the absolute last resort, right? Like you're on the verge of starvation. A government program steps in. It's not for people who are making $50,000 a year. It's for people who are at the last ditch effort to feed themselves and their children, right? And at that point, all but the very hardest core libertarians will say, all right, in that particular circumstance, we will step in and try to help, right? As the government. So if you have that system, why should you have the freedom to go choose snack cakes?
In fact,
you probably shouldn't, right? Like you should be able, that shouldn't be the thing. If you're providing the minimum level in desperate situations, it shouldn't be at a hostess stand. It shouldn't be.
My church runs what I believe is the largest global welfare unit in the world.
It's a terrible way of putting that.
I know. It's second only to the United States government. However, it has massive restrictions on it. I mean, you have to go through classes on being able to figure out, you know, what the problem is with your job situation. They may take you and say, okay, well, let's get you some further education to help you out in this situation. But you can't spend money like crazy. I mean, you have to show that you are good for it. You know, we will help you if there's a problem, but you have to do certain things to be able to show I'm going to build my life in a much more stable way. We can't even ask anyone that.
No, I mean, the conservatives have talked about this for a long time, making food stamps only available to buy healthy foods. And there's pretty sensible reasons for that. There's never been the political will to get that done, and it's pretty hard to implement. I guess the box situation would solve some of those issues. I just don't like the idea that the government is sending you a box of food every month.
No,
that does not sound like a good idea.
No, because it'll be all kinds of crony capitalism,
and it'll expand.
The next
administration's in there will make that thing cost three times as much, and you know, it's going to be very difficult to deal with. And you know, it would be a gigantic program. I mean, can you imagine just the resources that would go into?
Well, they say it's going to actually save a lot of money.
That's what they say.
Yeah,
you know, the government says that. I've heard that before from the government,
actually,
and I don't necessarily believe it.
Well, they did say this. They said we think it will save millions of dollars every single year. However, we haven't added in the actual shipping costs yet.
Oh.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So yesterday, some men clad in hazmat suits marched through Donald Jr. and Vanessa Trump's Manhattan apartment yesterday. They had to initiate decontamination procedures while Vanessa was taken to the hospital because earlier in the day, she received a curious letter in the mail. She opened it and white powder spilled out. Does anybody remember this? Is there anybody remember after 9/11 when they said that there was an anthrax scare and people were sending this to Congress and they were sending this to the White House? Do you remember what we used to think? Please don't let it be an American that did that. Then the Obamas got in and they were saying that, you know, the right was so dangerous, and every time there was something like this, please don't let this be somebody who has any connection at all to the Tea Party. And it never did, never was. Yesterday, I didn't sense anybody saying that to themselves. Oh, please don't let it be. Vanessa instantly felt nauseous and started coughing uncontrollably. Thankfully, the powder was found to be not hazardous. Vanessa and the other two people who were in the house are doing fine. I think if I opened up white powder in my house and I knew what was going on and what that could be, I think I would have been a little nauseous myself. But this isn't the first time An insidious letter containing white powder has been sent to the Trumps. In 2016, police investigated a similar letter sent to Eric Trump, and two letters containing the powder were sent to Trump Tower. Can you imagine? Who could possibly be doing that? And who would condone fear tactics like this? Well, we have our answer. Many on Twitter, including the Socialist Party. They tweeted from their official Socialist Party Twitter account, quote, "Disgusting people attract disgusting behavior," end quote. Now I could pretend I'm surprised, but socialists have always condoned violence and underhanded deeds. Look it up. It's all throughout history. So whether you hate them or you love them, does the Trump family deserve this kind of a threat? If you're saying, well, may I just ask that you don't lose sight of humanity? That we don't hate people just because they have a different perspective, or even if you think that they're haters themselves, why hate them and become what you claim they are? Are there any things that we can stand united on? If we can't stand united against the sentiments of the Socialist Party and say, I don't care what you did. I don't care what happened. No one deserves this. Everyone is worthy of respect. Well, then we might as well just go and join the Socialist Party, because this is something that socialists have never understood.
It's Tuesday, February 13th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yesterday, we started a new program on television where we get all of the hosts from the Blaze, and we gather around a roundtable and we just go through the news of the day. What was the biggest story of the day and why? And most of us agreed last night that the big story was the way the media was treating Kim Jong-un's sister and how she was just, she won smile diplomacy. Even though that's what the Japanese had warned the media, don't fall for, quote, smile diplomacy. They all went, you know, with both feet. They were all in. Can we remind you who she is, who her family is, and what North Korea is? We decided to have somebody on that's been on before who knows it firsthand.
Yeah, Michael Malice, who wrote the book Dear Reader, the unauthorized autobiography of Kim Jong-il, which is excellent, also spent time in North Korea and knows this regime and the whole family inside and out. Michael joins us now. Michael, people know that North Korea is bad. They know bad things happen there. They're kind of just becoming familiar with Kim Jong-un's sister. Can you explain who she is and what she's done?
Sure. The thing about the North Korean Kim family is, even internally, they're very mysterious. It's not like, you know, here where I can look at the State Department's website and figure out who the undersecretary is for something and look at the Wikipedia page. Information in North Korea about the main family is tightly controlled, to the point where you don't even discuss it in polite company. And let me give you an example. When I was in North Korea, we visited the grave of Kim Jong-un's grandmother, who was always referred to as anti-Japanese heroine Kim Jong-suk. And I asked my guide, I said, oh, did she have any other kids other than Kim Jong-il? Which you would think is a benign question. And she paused and looked at me. And it was the kind of thing where she had to answer, but it was like she didn't want to talk about it. If I asked somebody, hey, have you ever had a drug problem? It's like, what do I do? And she just paused and she goes, yes. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't mean any disrespect. Because in North Korea, the worst thing you can do is to talk about the Kim family. So you just repeat what you're told. So it wasn't discussed in the media that Kim Jong-il had a wife and had children, because that's something that human beings do. In North Korea, the family is regarded as almost supernatural. So she's a very recent figure to step out into the North Korean regime. Women are not in powerful positions there, but her job is to be in charge of the propaganda and agitation department. Now, this was the job Kim Jong-il had before he took over as leader. This is the job that Kim Jong-il used to build this personality cult around his father, the founder of North Korea, the great leader Kim Il-sung. So it's her role to make sure that everyone in North Korea is brainwashed from the time they're born to the time they meet and, unfortunately, early grave. And in North Korea, all art, by law, has to have a propagandistic purpose, and its meaning has to be clear. So not only does it have to be explicitly political, it has to be political and beat you over the head with it. And there's a story that illustrates this, which I, in my research, and I have it in my book, where as a kid, Kim Jong-il denounces the Mona Lisa. And I asked my mom, who grew up under in the Soviet Union, I go, hey, why does Kim Jong-il hate the Mona Lisa? And she goes, because she's got that Mona Lisa smile. It's ambiguous.
It's not clear.
Right? So real art, according to North Koreans, can't be ambiguous. It has to be clear. It has to have a political message. And that message is, we all think the thoughts of the leader, so, by law.
So, Michael, help me out on this, because I found it so despicable on how our media covered not only her, but the cheerleaders. Oh, they were fantastic. They were all in unison. Nobody pointed out that 21 of those cheerleaders went to prison and are still in prison from the last time they performed outside of their country.
Well, and they're also now pointing out that everyone from North Korea who is allowed to leave the country, even temporarily, their family is held as hostages. So if you get any ideas, your family is going to pay the price.
That's
so
they're it, literally, are they literally taken while the family? While
yes. No, not literally there, but there's an eye kept on them. So if you do anything wrong, they're going to be vanished. And this is actually a big problem for people who want to escape North Korea, because if you escape, your family who's left back home, what they have to start doing now is they bribe government officials to get death certificates. So they pretend, oh, my daughter didn't escape to China. My daughter died early so that, you know, we won't be punished.
Well, the guy who was that held up the crutches in the State of the Union, his father, because he escaped and his sister escaped.
Right.
And his father was tortured to death because of their escape.
Oh, yes. Yes. And it's, I mean, this is, I mean, here's the thing. I was emailing your producers yesterday at the same time you guys were saying, let's get Michael on the show. Cause I'm like, I knew that you and your audience would want to hear about this because it was so shocking to me. You know, when I started writing my book and doing work with North Korea, so much of the media attention was on what a spectacle they are, what a sideshow they are. And I'm like, I'm going to do something about this because this isn't really funny. What you're watching is, you know, Glenn, if someone put a gun to your head, you're going to dance. You're going to be a cheerleader. You know what I mean? Whatever it takes, just don't hurt me and my family. You know what I mean? And people weren't noticing that. So I wrote Dear Reader and I did a lot of press. And the media attention started focusing from, okay, how wacky they are, to this is barbaric. You know, there's an organization called Reporters Without Borders. North Korea is the worst place on earth in terms of press freedom. So you would think that journalists, you know, having some kind of collegial responsibility would be pointing that out. So to see what happened on Saturday when they're talking about her, you know, like she's on The Bachelor, and the fact that she's sitting there not doing anything, she didn't say anything, and they're acting like she's Lady Di, I couldn't even wrap my head around it. It felt like such a step backward for me.
Michael, the only thing we could come up with is that they despise Donald Trump so much that they are willing to look at anyone else and say, look at, she bested Mike Pence. Is that even reasonable to think that that might be their motivation? I mean, why would they do this?
I think it's something else. I think that they are so privileged that they have no idea what it's like to live in a country without freedom. If you're looking at Trump and you could say a lot of terrible things about Trump and are comparing him to Hitler, right? You don't know what tyranny is. You don't know what a dictatorship is. Mike Pence, what did Mike Pence, you know, compare to these, say the worst thing you can imagine about Mike Pence, to compare him to the dictators now and then is mind-boggling. So I think they just really look at her like Angela Merkel or Theresa May from the UK, that she's just a foreign leader, and they had completely dropped context that this woman has blood, including the blood of her own family, on her hands.
She had to be involved in the killing of her uncle and the killing of her brother, right?
Of course. I mean, that's how these murder families work, you know? So, and she's involved in the killing of many people now. You know, propaganda is you have to smile and nod and repeat what I told. Let me give you an example of what North Korean propaganda sounds like. In kindergarten, they're taught Kim Jong-il was in his own kindergarten class, and the teacher said 1 + 1 = 2. And young Kim Jong-il said, no, that's wrong. And the teacher goes, what do you mean? And he goes, well, if I have one drop of water and I had another drop of water, I don't have two drops. I have one giant drop. And what this is a metaphor is we should eliminate individuality in North Korea and have one country where everyone is the same. And they call it the monolithic ideological system. You saw that picture where they all had those same masks. Their point, and they brag about this, is we are a country where everyone thinks the same way, the way of the leader. That is their goal, to eliminate critical, independent thought. This is not something they're ashamed of. This is something they are proud of. Now, you and I can disagree about some things. Me and Stu can disagree about some things. You go live your life, I live mine. The idea that you or anyone would want us all to think identically is barbaric and horrifying.
We're going to be back with some more. I want to talk to Michael about what's happening in South Korea, because South Korea seems to be buying into this, even though the Japanese prime minister said, warning, don't buy into it. So many people are. Back in a minute.
MichaelMalice.com is the place you can go to get his work, as well on Twitter. He's a... I don't know how he'd probably admit to being an internet troll. Very enjoyable to follow on Twitter. I will say that, at Michael Malice.
Casper Mattress made a huge difference in my life. I have to tell you, I had to go to a funeral out of state over the weekend, and I slept in it was a nice hotel, and you know, they had a nice mattress. I could not sleep. I mean, a Casper Mattress is going to wreck your sleep just about every place else, because you'll get a great night's sleep every night. Casper, they have a team of engineers that have worked nonstop, prototyping, collecting data, engineering what is certainly the most comfortable mattress that you have ever slept on. It has a unique combination of foams that provide the right pressure relief and alignment, so you're balanced and comfortable. And thanks to the breathable material, you're guaranteed to sleep cool. It's built to last years. Try yours out yourself for 100 nights in your own home, risk-free. They're going to ship it to you in a small little compact box for free, and then you open it up, you sleep on it. You don't have to worry about getting it back into the box. If you don't love it, they'll refund all the money, and they'll come by and pick it up themselves, okay? Casper. Try it now. President's Day, not only is Casper saving you long lines during the holiday weekends, you'll also save $125 on purchases over $1,250 and $200 on purchases over $2,000. So don't miss out. Take advantage of the special limited time offer right now at Casper.com. That's Casper.com. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Michael Malice, the author of Dear Reader, the unauthorized biography of Kim Jong-il, expert on North Korea. Michael, the propaganda game seems to be working, at least from a distance. People are talking about, oh, how great it was that Mike Pence didn't stand for a united Korea. Well, I wouldn't have stood for that either, but everybody seems outraged by that.
Yeah, and here's the thing. You talk about the propaganda game, and this is the part I haven't seen people in the press discussing, which adds a whole other level of depravity. You know, she gets to take those headlines and send them back to North Korea to the population and be like, look, all the Western media is praising us, and she'll be telling the truth. I mean, they tell their population that the world's obsessed with them. They tell the population that everyone in all these countries are interested in studying their ideology, the Juche idea. But now she'll be telling the truth. Here's the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, CNN. Look, I stole the show. All eyes were on me. And it's the truth. These will be actual headlines. So it's really, really sick to me.
So does South Korea want reunification with the North?
South Korea does. I mean, obviously, it's just like the beautiful thing about a democracy as opposed to a monolithic ideological system like North Korea is that there's differences of opinion and we can discuss issues and come to, you know, a consensus or not. So there is it's all over the map in South Korea. Young people especially are not particularly interested in reunifying. The North is regarded as this like rural kind of like hillbilly embarrassment country. When refugees get to the South, they have to work very hard to lose their accents because they're treated extremely poorly. They're also very ignorant. They don't know what computers are, and they're often malnourished and short. And South Korea is very status-oriented. But again, you know, what's amazing about the propaganda offensive, they were threatening to send missiles to Guam over the summer, remember? And everyone's forgotten about that already. This is Mike Pence is supposed to shake hands with the woman whose country is like, we're going to send missiles to attack U.S. soil. And it's like, oh, that was last summer. It's bygones. Let's be pals now. What? I mean, it's mind-boggling. But the other thing is, in the 90s, they did this already. Kim Dae-jung, who was president of South Korea at the time, went to North Korea, shook hands with Kim Jong-il. It was called the Sunshine Policy. Mm-hmm. The idea was, let's give whatever they want, and maybe they'll be good people. He got the Nobel Peace Prize as a consequence, but all the consequence of it is North Korea maintained their hold on power, and they starved their own population. So this is not new. They go through these cycles, and I can't understand how reporters who are covering this fall for it, you know, time and time again. I mean, we've been there, done that many, many times with this despicable nation.
Michael, we have about 2 minutes. I was amazed by the... One of the things that they kept saying was, hey, we're looking forward to seeing our South Korean neighbors in Pyongyang, I think is the way they said it. They didn't say South Korea because they don't typically say that.
Correct.
But the media seemed to take that as, look at this gesture. They want to reunite and come together. That's not what they're saying, right? They're saying that eventually there will be no South Korea. And then at that point, you'll be North Korean citizens or just Korean citizens, and you'll be back. You'll be able to go back to Pyongyang. It was a threat.
It's mixed, because so their whole argument is that Korea is the only country that has racially pure blood since the beginning of time. Korean was the first language. Korea was the first government, and Korea is indivisible. So when they talk about North and South, it's lowercase n, lowercase s, mm-hmm. because the South is not a separate country. It's a region under U.S. occupation, right? So they are always obsessed with reunification. The T-shirts they say Korea is one, but this is something that they use as propaganda because it's like, look, the only reason we're not reunified is because of those wicked U.S. imperialists who have the South Korean puppets under their control. So this is a mechanism to further divide their population against the U.S. But if they want to talk, I'd rather they be talking than building missiles. But at the same time, these are not people who play fair. These are not, you know, me and you are gonna, you're gonna try to sell me a house. You want to have as much money. I want to have less money, and it's some kind of bargain. These are shady people who will say what they need to do to get what they want.
How do you think this ends, Michael?
I hope this is I honestly think if this were the end of the North Korean regime, this is what the end would look like. Because there is so much information getting to North Korea, the fact that the UN's united against them, the fact that China has started even their own little way to turn their back on them, the fact that they have to leave Pyongyang and get on a plane to go to other countries. It's like in Hollywood, it's like who goes to whose table. So I'm...
Glenn. Beck.
Sorry, we're out of...
Mercury.
Hate that, we're out of time.
This is the Glenn Beck Program.
The intel chiefs are testifying about national security threats to our country, and they are spending a lot of time today talking about Russia and what's happening with the election. One of our security chiefs said earlier they're going to do what they did last time and worse. We're not making any progress on this. We're not doing anything about this. That seems to be a problem, especially since war seems to be heating up a little bit with Russia in a story that no one is paying attention to.
Are you saying that just because we just killed over 100 Russian troops?
I heard as many as
wounded maybe 300.
I heard as many as 600. Is that been confirmed?
It's not confirmed, I don't think. But there's, I mean, it was major. They attacked a U.S. Kurdish base, and we wiped them out with artillery and jet fighters. Russian troops. I mean, that's. Now, Russia claims that was some rogue unit and that they didn't order the attack on the U.S. base.
And according
and we're accepting that.
According to reports, we're accepting that as actually true.
Yeah.
Whether
I don't know that it is.
We don't want to start another, you know, a giant escalation with Russia either.
Right.
So we may just be kind of ignoring what we actually believe.
It's a little unnerving, though, to think that U.S. and Russian forces are
crossing swords.
Yeah. Are actually engaging one another and interacting like that, and that we killed so many Russians. That's usually not a good start to a wonderful relationship.
Usually, the last time we killed a bunch of Russians was never.
Yeah, yeah, never.
You try not to.
Never.
Just because it doesn't work out particularly well. It's not a fun thing. And that's
the
biggest issue is like what this could escalate into if something goes awry, right?
That's
the thing. We need to do some homework. We'll do it before the TV show. Maybe I can tuck this in. Do some homework on how the Russian media back home is portraying this. And if they're not portraying it, why? Why are they not reporting on it? If they are, how are they spinning it? Because Putin has spent a lot of time recently trying to make United States into the big bad wolf. And if we've just killed 100 of their soldiers, I can't imagine. Can you imagine if Russians killed 100 of our soldiers? What
would be
an
incredible outcry.
Oh, my gosh.
Although,
incredible.
I will say, if the reason they got killed is because a bunch of rogue troops went and attacked a bunch of people in their base, I think, you know, if that we knew that was true, I would feel a lot less sympathetic to our side.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't just go.
If we believed that they were rogue troops, what would it take for us to believe that those were rogue troops?
A lot.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I would believe it.
Yeah, I don't think
I'm
would
not sure
either.
I believe these Russians were rogue troops.
Right.
Doesn't sound reasonable.
It does seem, though, that the facts are agreed upon that the Americans were were just hanging out and they came and started attacking.
Yes.
So they were not
aggressors. So I do like the point that we kick their ass.
I do like that a lot.
I like that.
I do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes you feel good that we can still do that, that we're willing to do that, because it seems like under the Obama administration,
what they say,
would have said, oh, whoa, okay, well, maybe you can have half of the garrison and we'll keep the other half. Maybe you take 2/3 and we'll just.
What do here's Montana.
Get out of your way.
Montana. Yeah, that's generous.
Yeah. So what was the rogue troops excuse?
I haven't seen an excuse.
Because I haven't seen
It was called unprovoked. So they seemingly didn't have an excuse. Have you seen them say any reason for why they attacked the U.S. base? I haven't seen one.
No, I mean, just...
It'd be interesting to see again in their media.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we had rogue troops attack Russia, we would immediately disavow them and we would find out what were they thinking? Mm-hmm. And we would be all over that. If they're not saying that these are rogue troops, if they're not saying that America killed a whole bunch, and if they're not saying, if they're reporting this story and they're not saying, well, we talked to them and this was their reasoning, I think that's trouble. Putin saves this kind of stuff. You know, he pulls this kind of stuff out and makes it an issue when it is his time.
You have this coming up this week on the TV show, talking a little bit more about Alexander Dugin, a guy from Russia, a really influential guy, and a guy who's collected many groups from around the world to try to change the way politics and ideology kind of works in the world. He's got a whole book about it and everything. But what is he doing with this information? Because certainly, I can't imagine those types of groups in Russia are presenting it that way. And if you look at the certainly on social media, you'll see people aligned with those groups are coming up with conspiracy theories as to why this happened, that it's not the way they're telling us, that, you know, of course the Americans
flag?
Are the bad guys.
False
yeah.
flag.
Yeah. I mean, basically, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what's really interesting to me is if you read the fourth political theory by Dugin, he's a terrifying guy. And he says that Hitler didn't go far enough. And it's his philosophy that is so frightening. He talks about the people of the sea and the people of the land. And the people of the sea are the North Atlantic Sea Treaty. And the people of the land are Russia and the original motherland. I've been reading a book called Hitler's Monsters and another one at the same time called Ordinary Men.
And wait, you're reading a Nazi book?
I am.
Of some kind?
Shocking.
I am.
When does that? Wow. Yeah.
Stunning development.
This, I tell you, Hitler's Monsters is absolutely fascinating. It is. It's really scholarly, so it's a little dry. But it is about how the seeds were planted for the dark arts and for, Luciferianism. Long before Hitler came into power. And it talks about all of the things. It starts with Indiana Jones is not real. However, there is a real guy that's based on. Now, let's get away from the cartoons and let's look at what they were really trying to do. Anyway, there's this thing called the Thule Society that started in the teens and early 20s. Hitler was a big... his council were big... scholars in this Thule society, that is Atlanteans. They believed that the people that were Germans in the Aryan race, they were Atlanteans. They survived. And they were this master race. And
from Atlantis?
Yeah. And that's pretty much what, the people of the sea, people of the land, pretty much what Dugin is saying. Mm-hmm. He's using all of these old pagan crazy kind of myths and knitting them all together, and people will buy them when they're hungry or when they're afraid,
mixed with some apocalyptic biblical things too, like,
yes, except in this book, and
like
it was
the Antichrist coming from the sea. I mean, that's
Dugin, right?
Yeah.
Dugin is
blaming NATO.
Yes.
That's becoming more and more popular.
Yes. And what's frightening is if you look at what happened with Hitler, and in this book, Hitler's Beasts, it was written by a guy from Cambridge, and it's very scholarly. And so it's not hyperbole at all. In fact, much of it is very dry. But if you look at it, he's making the case, don't listen ever to anyone who says this was Christian. This is not a Christian movement. It is the exact opposite.
Nazis.
And he has documented in Hitler's own writing, in books, all these books called like The Magician and stuff, Dark Arts. Hitler underlined certain things and wrote in the margins things like a real leader cannot truly be successful without demonic seeds inside of him. I mean, they really were going for evil stuff, and it's happening again. It's
pretty spooky.
It's happening again.
And they actually believed that they were the people of Atlantis.
They believed in Thor. They believed all of this. They took all of these little pieces and put them together and then rolled it up into one, in one demonic blanket. It's fascinating.
We have the author of Hitler's Monsters coming on.
I think next week.
Is it next week or the week after?
Yeah,
it's coming up pretty soon. Yeah. Because that book is...
That should be fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
You could build an entire series out of this book, it seems like.
Oh, this book is... It's a little difficult to read. Because there's so much language in there that you don't know.
Three syllable words are in there.
Right.
No. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh,
yeah. Not three.
So there's only a few of three syllable, mostly two. So it's pretty hard. No,
but when have you ever heard that theory before? I've never heard of that.
He said, that's just one theory. That's just one part. Okay. That's not the overarching part. That's just one part. But he says at the very beginning, look, all of this stuff in Marvel Comics with the, the red mask of death, that guy, and all of this stuff is in our popular culture, but that's all lies built on a truly frightening, platform that really happened. And we have to understand that. And as I'm reading it, I'm telling you, well, what was the group that we looked at last week, Stu, on the Russian?
120 dB.
Yeah. We're looking at this World National Conservative meeting or whatever it is done by Dugin. You look at what they believe and you read that book and you're like, oh my gosh, it's coming back.
Is he still a big Trump supporter?
Dugan?
Yeah.
I don't know.
He's falling off that bandwagon a little bit.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Leading up to the election, he was all about Donald Trump.
But
I wonder if that's changed now.
You look at this World National Conservative Movement, which is basically a global National Socialist Party. It's the Nazis all over again. It's in 66. There's 66 groups, and it's in over 22 countries now. It's all financed, including America, and it's all financed by Russia and Alexander Dugin. And if you look at it, it's all the same philosophies. It's Dugin and Hitler combined. And then on top of it, when you go look at what they're saying, what did you just say? I was just trying to make a point based on what you just asked, Stu. Don't remember. Do you remember
the Trump part of?
Yeah. If he's still a supporter.
If you go into those groups and you start to look internally and what they're talking about on their own websites, Breitbart is everywhere.
Really?
It is everywhere. In every country, every Nazi front group, it's everywhere. It's amazing.
And chilling.
Totally chilling.
Wow.
Because it's going in two directions.
So Pat, host of Pat Gray Unleashed, coming up in just a moment. Also, on the new program, The News and Why It Matters, how did you feel about the first show, Pat?
I felt really good about it. I thought it was maybe the best television program ever done. Yeah, I think that a lot of people were saying that.
A lot of people. I saw a lot of people on the internet.
A lot of people were saying that. Yeah.
Didn't see anybody say
best,
that.
Best show ever done.
Best show ever done. Well, that's because you were probably reading about your part, and that was not what they were saying about Glenn's part.
Right.
Yeah, it was specifically about me and Stu.
But
I didn't pay that much attention to it.
All right. Tonight at 5:30, you can join me for my show at 5, and then The News and Why It Matters at 5:30. Don't miss it today, only on The Blaze TV, theblaze.com/TV. Volatility in the stock market. There's wild swings in Bitcoin, constant turmoil in Washington. Has anybody noticed that gold has come off its best year since 2010? Gold is up almost $100 since mid-December, with lots of room to run, especially if there is inflation. Why? Because gold is the universal hedge against inflation. When your dollar starts to lose its value, gold starts to go up. If you've done well speculating in crypto, you know, or in the extended rise of the stock market, have you considered reviewing everything and say, am I hedged here for inflation? Because it is coming. Gold isn't an all-in strategy, but there is help there to help spread out your risk, diversify, and be part of a smart long-term investment strategy. And as a reminder, Goldline is under new ownership with really great pricing now, but the same great service. And for you and you only right now, you can help celebrate the Winter Olympics. Goldline is giving away an officially licensed Team USA Olympic 1 ounce silver round on your next purchase. All you have to do is call them at 866-GOLDLINE, 1-866-GOLDLINE. Get this special U.S. Olympic Team silver round at 866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So tonight you don't want to miss TV at 5 o'clock. We're going to go through this whole Susan Rice memo. There is something really wrong, and we're going to use just the facts from the New York Times. Of course, not yesterday's New York Times. We're going to tie a few stories together for the New York Times because they refuse to tie them together themselves. So we will we'll show you that tonight at 5 o'clock, what the rest of the media would like to pretend this isn't the article you're looking for.
And then at 5:30, The News and Why It Matters.
Yes.
Brand new show on The Blaze. Mm-hmm. Yep. So please check that out with Glenn, myself, Pat, Doc Thompson, Sarah Gonzalez.
So some millennials got into a boat.
They did. This is a very sad show today.
Sounds like a joke.
First of all, we heard about the Americans who joined ISIS are disappointed by the experience.
That was really sad.
That was a really sad segment. If you missed that, you need to go back and watch this one.
They did, you know, menial stuff. They weren't beheading people.
Some millennials decided they wanted to leave the world behind, because how can we live our lives when we're working most of the day and you have to pay so much just to live?
Oh, my gosh.
So they paid $14,000 to purchase a boat that's 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They sold all their possessions, bought this boat, decided to embark on their journey. But there was one problem. Neither of them had bothered to learn how to sail.
Ah.
They also did not buy insurance.
Ah, okay. All right.
Perhaps no surprise that they
capsized.
Well,
once you buy a boat, the nice thing about boats, Stu,
yes.
Once you buy it, you don't ever have to put another dollar into
no,
it.
No, no maintenance costs. There's no maintenance effort at all.
Those are easy. Those are great.
Well, they capsized the boat on the first day. Stunningly, as they tried to go to Key West, they were pulled into a channel, ran aground on a sandbar. Neither were hurt. They did save their dog, and they tried to get the internet to pay for their new boat. They needed $10,000 to salvage their boat, and they still don't know how to sail. They still have not purchased insurance, but they have raised $13,181.
It pisses me off.
Because the rest of society is so stupid.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my God. We'll see you tonight at 5.
Glenn Beck. Mercury.